Hey, what's up? It's Emily, and I'm pretty sure that compassionate coordinated healthcare is something on the top of everyone's mind. That is why I love Live by Advantia Health. From primary care to mental health and gynecology to obstetrics, Live understands these are all connected and important to you. Live is a membership-based practice in the heart of DC that prioritizes your experience. Plus, Live accepts all major insurance. So take charge of your healthcare on your schedule and choose Live. Learn more and become a member by searching for Live by Advantia, L-I-V by Advantia. Hey, what's up? It's Emily. And now more than ever, compassionate coordinated healthcare is at the forefront of our minds and something I want to prioritize. That's why I love Live by Advantia Health. Live is a healthcare practice that provides complete women's health and wellness, and it's all in one place. From primary care to mental health and gynecology to obstetrics, Live understands these are all connected and important to you. And with Saturday hours, you can find time for your healthcare on your schedule. With Live, you'll have a care team that works together with you to personalize a wellness plan around your distinct needs and goals. Their innovative care model puts you at the center, making it easy to start out healthy and stay that way. So how does it work? Live is a membership-based practice in the heart of DC that prioritizes your experience. And on top of top-notch patient care, members also get access to care coordination, same-day prescription delivery, exclusive events, and so much more. Plus, they accept all major insurance. So take care of your healthcare on your schedule and choose Live. Learn more and become a member by searching for Live by Advantia. That's L-I-V by Advantia.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus as we take the glorious monstrosity out onto the sunny streets of Chicago on a beautiful Friday evening. And with me is my co-pilot, the great one, the podfather, Doug Tonis. How you doing, my friend?
Pretty good. I mean, yeah, got a 5-game winning streak going into the All-Star break.
Six.
You come out and you beat.
Six.
I mean, come on, you give me a second here.
I'm sorry to step on you.
You come out and you know you're entering this tough part of the schedule, and you get a win against Atlanta right away. Granted, Atlanta is kind of one of the easier teams on it, but yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome to see DeMar DeRozan keep his Chamberlain-esque streak alive as well. So yeah, all good news around here.
How do you think the Atlanta fans feel knowing that their franchise player, one Trae Young, who's probably going to be a fixture there for the next decade, has been literally shut down completely by our second round pick all season long, and in the imminent future? What say you?
I doubt very much that they look at it.
Thanks. Thanks for stepping on my point. You're going to step on. I'll step on. Lots of stuff
and I'm just not stepping on your point. Like, I just don't think that, like, the Atlanta fans are like, oh, Trae Young got shut down by whatever. I'm worried about
Iowa.
This. If we just want to talk about how great Iowa is, you know, we could just be more direct. We don't need to just sneak around it. I mean, Iowa's been pretty awesome. And yeah, it was a tremendous to see him doing that last game too, right? I mean, like, it just,
oh man,
you know, kind of that stat came in about, like, Trae Young was at some ridiculously bad percentage against IO previously, and you're like, whatever, small sample size, but you know, hey, did it again. And in this game, you didn't have Caruso or Lonzo Ball in the game, so you know, he was really putting in a lot more minutes doing it too. So
yeah
pretty three pretty of seven all around.
3 of 17 for Trae Young, 0 of 5 from three. Just a stellar performance from Io defensively. And not only that, in a key possession of the game where he basically went one-on-one against him and completely shut him down. It's just heartwarming to see some of the defensive options that have developed on this team, starting with him. Obviously, you all knew Caruso was great. You got Ball. It's pretty awesome to see some of the defensive talent we have on the perimeter.
This team can do a lot of things. Right?
When healthy.
We talked about we're healthy. I mean, we talked a lot about last show, I believe it was, where I was saying, like, hey, look at this, like, guard lineup they can run out.
Yes.
Where it's like every guard is like 6'5 and lanky. You know, it's like, yeah, you could do some really interesting things with this roster. And you know, I think the other big thing was, and I have to imagine, just knowing you, you're as excited about this as I was. But man, Tristan Thompson sure looked pretty exciting about, you know, like, I was like, yeah, whatever, we'll see what happens.
You got to,
like,
whisper it though, Doug. You can't tell, you can't mention that you're excited about him with any women around for some reason. I don't know. I mentioned it, that I was excited about his acquisition, and every woman in my life was very angry with that statement. So I don't even know the details about what happened. Maybe you do, if you could share that with the.
I mean, I think he had kids with several women and refused to pay child support and lied about being the father of one of, or I shouldn't say lied, refused to take a paternity test and had a lot of stuff going on. Like he definitely.
Oh, that makes sense. All right. Well,
it's definitely there's like some reasons. It's not crazy. We'll just leave it at that. Like, it's not crazy that. People would be like, I'm not excited about this guy from a
I definitely won't be standing and clapping anymore. That's for sure. I did not know that it was that bad. I just thought he was, you know, being unfaithful to several women. But holy cow, that's not good. Regardless, let's stick to the court.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, like, anytime you want to get into what any of these guys are doing in a off the court perspective, I think it's, you know, always a little tricky, right? Like, I mean, it just is the way it is. Not to make any excuses or anything else for his behavior, like, or say I condone it or anything. But if you want to get onto the moral court with guys playing basketball, like, man, there's a long line of things you gotta be concerned about at that point, you know?
Exactly. Let's just focus on the court activity. I'm sure he regrets a lot of his mistakes. I know I do.
I regret his mistakes as well.
I regret my own, too, although I will admit they're nowhere near as significant as those. But let's get into – first of all, I want to take a step back. You were upset, I believe, that the Bulls used their biannual exception on Tristan Thompson. That's a significant asset?
No, not really. Maybe okay. Upset is like a little
Explain
bit of a stretch.
Why.
Like, I just thought, like, you know, hey, it's like you use this exception. You can't use it now for 2 years. And you used it to pay Tristan Thompson literally $200,000 more. And it just kind of felt like, wow, that sort of feels like a waste of a exception. But it's not that valuable of an exception anyway. And I believe I got to look this up. But our buddy Salim told me they can't use it if they go into the tax anyway. And I would need to verify that. But if that's true, and he didn't say that exactly, but he implied it with one of his tweets. And I think that's what he meant. And if that's true, then I fully withdraw everything I said, because then it would be totally irrelevant. But yeah, it's just like, it just seemed a little weird. Like, you're using up an exception you can only use once every 2 years to pay Tristan Thompson literally $200,000 more.
Yeah. And what do you think the reasoning was?
Maybe that was what they had to do. Like, it just seemed like Tristan Thompson's made, like, I don't know how much he's made. Without looking it up, I'd guess like $50-60 million. It would seem really weird that $200,000 was the difference between his decision one way or the other.
Well, who knows?
But maybe all that child support exactly.
There you
the
go.
Problem. Like, who knows? Maybe that's exactly right. You know, like, I don't. You know, I guess never walk in another man's shoes. Like, it kind of feels like if I was picking my job over like $100, though, like, it just doesn't seem likely. But yeah. Either way, I've come around to think, like, yeah, that was probably not a worthy thing to be concerned about.
All right, so let's get, though, with his on-court play, which was, I thought, pretty exceptional yesterday. I mean, this has been been a problem for the Bulls all season. Outside of Vooch, they don't have really any great rebounders in the front court. Outside of Vooch, they don't really have any answers. I guess you could say Tony Bradley's an adequate backup, but, you know, I think this guy clearly is probably already the best rim defender on the team. He's got great athleticism. He can block shots. Just a tremendous upgrade at the backup center position. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, it's from what we saw right away, he sure looked fantastic. You know, I mean, like, just like off the cuff, he just looked really great. So, you know, obviously no complaints with anything he's doing. Like, he looked like he was going to come in, and there's like some talk, and even I was like, man, maybe this guy is washed up, but boy, looking at him now, he just looks really
good. 8 free throws, you know, in 13
very,
minutes.
Very promising.
That's pretty hard to do, yeah. Dude. I mean, yeah, he's aggressive. It just looked like a home run.
It's like matches like Vucevic's free throws for the year almost.
Oh, how dare you. You always got to go there. Hey, you know, big picture here. This team is kind of roaring right now. You know what I mean? Like, six straight wins. We're number one in the East as of almost at March 1st. What an accomplishment when you go back thinking of where we were before the season. And now we're going down to our final 22 games, right? And obviously the schedule gets a lot tougher. Are you pretty confident, though, as I am now, that this team's going to remain in the top six at some form or fashion? They're not going to fall into the play-in game? They're not going to fall that far?
I mean, yeah. Top six is not like Are you confident they're not going to drop six spots to seven? I mean,
like,
that's like a pretty like a team, pretty large drop.
The
I
team
mean,
at six right now are the Boston Celtics. They've won 9 out of 10. They just destroyed the Nets. Like, that's a team that's 35 and 26 and playing.
Yeah,
very
yeah,
well.
It's good teams. I'm just saying, like, you set the bar like at a place where, like, yes, I feel we should be confident we will.
Yeah, but we're only 4.5.
Like seventh is
4.5.
4.5. I mean, 4.5 is like a pretty big amount of games with 22 games left. That means like some other team has to win 4 more games than you win. You have to lose 4 and they have to win 4. Like, that's a pretty big gap, you know, between good teams. And you'd have to do that versus, like, you know, you're 3 games ahead of the 76ers who are in third. So that means you have to perform worse by a considerable margin than 4 other teams.
I'm just saying, Doug, I'm just saying, next 5 games.
And actually, it's 5.5 if you talk about 7. You know, like 4.5 just gets you to 6. So actually, to fall to 7th, you would need to perform 5.5 games worse than the Raptors. We're not going to lose five games more than the Raptors the rest of the way.
I'm just pointing out our next 5 games. Grizzlies at home, excellent team. The Bulls at the Heat. The Bulls at the Hawks, the Bucks at home, 76ers in Philly. They could easily.
Did you see my amazing tweet?
No. I mean,
you
missed
my
amazing
Bulls.
I'm
going to
miss
your tweets.
Your amazing tweet.
I know, you're going to miss a tweet. I don't make many tweets either, so they should stand out. You know, like, I'm not very
so
active.
So which one was this?
But here's my amazing tweet. It's topical. You'll enjoy it. We'll learn a lot about the Bulls down the stretch. Remaining schedule, 15 of 22 games against top 8 seeds. In the East or West. 2 more against play-in teams. Of the 5 of non-play-in, non-playoff teams, they're all on the road. 13 on the road overall versus 9 at home. That's the rest of the season. So it's going to be a tough road. Like, it's not going to be an easy path from here to the end of the season.
They have the second hardest schedule in the NBA.
You know, the Bulls,
yeah, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, and that means, you know, their record was benefited by having easier games earlier. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is what it is. You know, and it's tough too because the Bulls are not fully healthy yet either. You know, and my follow up to this amazing tweet was another amazing tweet. Just second.
Your modesty is just growing and.
I know. It's, you're growing on me.
Exactly. I'm having a positive effect.
I now feel very excited about my own thoughts on
Humble.
Twitter.
Sit down.
That said, there may have never been a year in the NBA where seeding was less valuable. We haven't seen a fully healthy team yet, which we hopefully should by the playoffs. So even if there's a poor stretch, it's just not the end of the world. You know, like, I mean, it's like if we finish sixth, like, does it really matter? Right now, at the 1 seed, we're set to play Brooklyn in the playoffs. I mean, like, you know, I mean, like, just like, and like you said, like, Boston in 6 is really good. And, you know, like everyone is just really good. You're going to play a really great team in the first round, and that applies to every team in the first round. So, you know, like, it just doesn't matter. Like, it might another year. Like, if you were the 7th team, you still might end up with a similar caliber matchup to if you're the 1 team. Like, it's just so wild this year. So, you know, it's like, just get to the end of the season healthy, integrate all these guys in the lineup, figure out your playoff rotation. You know, that's really what I'm looking for. You know, obviously you don't want to lose like 15 out of 22 games or something ridiculous, but, you know, it's going to be a really tough matchup no matter what happens. There's not going to be an easy road even to the second round, and there's absolutely no easy road to get to the finals or anywhere. You know,
yeah,
further.
So this is a point I was just making, arguing with a friend the other day. There's 6 teams in the East that I think could get to the finals. That's the Bulls, the Heat, the Sixers, the Bucks, the Celtics, or the Nets. Those 6 teams, when healthy, I think can get to the finals and go on a run and beat anybody. 2 of those teams are going to be out in the first round. So just think about that. You know, so you go from being a finals contender to out in round number 1. You just don't want to be one of those 2 teams. And, you know, I'm not even talking about the Cavs. I'm not even talking about the Raptors. And those are 2 solid teams, you know. So this is a tough, really tough East. We got a team like the Raptors are 8 out of 10. 8 out of their past 10. You got the Celtics winning 9 out of their past 10. Every team, the Bulls, the Heat, the Sixers, and Bucks are all over 500 in their last 10 games. The only team that's on a downward slide In the top 10 is the Hornets, who are 1-9 in their last 10, including 3 in a row. They're falling quickly. But it's the superior conference. It's a much better conference than the West this year for the first time in a long time. And, you know, that's something to think about that, you know, no matter what, if you're, this is going to be a successful season, no matter what, even if we do end up with a first-round loss. I'll stand on that hill, depending on who we play, though. But if we lose to the Nets, if we lose to the Celtics, I'll be fine. You know, as long as we.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's going to be upset if you lose to those teams. I agree. It's like, not that some you will. Would like to yeah. see it, but you shouldn't reasonably be upset if you lose to those squads. In my opinion,
do you agree with those six teams?
Yeah.
Like, could you see any?
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Is there anyone else that you would say? I mean, hey, this team could.
No, I don't think so.
Right. I agree too. I mean, the Raptors are too young.
I mean, it's your point. Of course, you agree.
Cavs are too young.
Yeah, I mean. I guess maybe I would say, like, I don't know that the Bulls' odds are all that much better than the Cavs' odds. If I was just to maybe, I guess, put it that way. Like, I'm just not sure.
Oh, really? But, oh, my gosh, Doug, I mean, got to disagree with you on that one.
Well, I mean, the Bulls don't have a bunch of guys. Like, Zach LaVine's never been to the playoffs. Vucevic has never been to the second round.
Well, who won the Cavs?
You got Caruso, who won the title. No one. But I'm just saying, that's what you're saying about the Cavs, is like they don't have enough experience. Like the Bulls aren't loaded with
Tristan Thompson.
Yeah, they got Caruso. Yeah, I guess they got Thompson now.
They got who else am I missing? But, I guess that's about it. Well, I always gone to the second round of the tournament. Anyhow, he's a winner, but
that's critical.
He's got some experience last year. I mean, that's a good point, but the Cavs don't have anybody. Like, I feel very confident we're going to destroy the Cavs. And the Nets and Cavs are two teams that, you know, I think are going to be really good in years to come. So, like, but they're not a threat to beat us in round one. I think this team
You said the Nets and Cavs.
I'm sorry.
So I think you
meant the what are we talking about? The Raptors and Cavs. I think those are really two teams that are very.
I mean, the Raptors have got a lot of. I don't think the Raptors are good enough. But, I mean, Siakam and Van Vliet.
Scotty Barnes?
And Obi. Yeah, Scotty Barnes is like the only young guy in that team that's exciting. The rest of them, you know, everyone else in that team that's good has already won a title. You know, so, they definitely have a lot of depth that has been there and has done the whole thing and performed in big moments, right?
Well, so, how old is Gary Trent Jr.?
I think their problem. I don't know.
Playing out of his mind lately.
Yeah, I don't know. My thought is like overall though, like I don't think the Raptors are talented enough. They're like a try hard team. They're like an Eric Spoelstra team without like stars on it. Like, you know, Nick Nurse and Eric Spoelstra might be my two favorite coaches in the league right now. Like just two really great guys. Like you just look at like whatever they're doing with whatever talent they have. And you're just like, they shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah. Let's get back.
with those guys, they shouldn't
be doing that. Let's get back to the beloved Bull. I want to add the topic at hand, the rotation again. Bull's fully healthy. Yeah. Have you had a chance to think about this a little bit more? You know, who's out of the rotation? Let's say they go 8-9 deep. Who do you think are the two players most likely out of the rotation?
So we'll say 9 deep, right?
Let's go 9 deep.
Or 8 or 9. 8 or 9. Name 8 or 9, I guess. We'll start with that. So we're going to go 9?
Let's go 9 deep.
That's the plan. All right, so you're gonna have the big four for sure, right? That's not even a question. That's, you know, Ball, Zach, DeMar, and Vooch, and I think Caruso and Io and Kobe have to be in there, which gets you now to 7, and then so now you're really just arguing over the last two spots, and you know it's gonna be then a combination of two of these three guys, I think. Maybe two of these four guys, which would be Tristan Thompson, who just arrived, Derek Jones Jr., Javonte Green, and Pat Williams. So it's going to be two of those four, you know, assuming Pat Williams comes back. And, you know, I kind of feel like if I had to pick guys, it's probably for me Derek Jones Jr. and Tristan Thompson. You know, like it might vary a little bit based on what you need. Like the ninth guy in that might be a guy that, like, you know, flips around a little bit depending on.
I agree, 100%.
So it's probably going to be like Derek Jones Jr. is probably, I think, going to play, and then between Green, Thompson, and Pat Williams, it'll depend on like what you need on that day. Like if you need a bigger body, you're going to go with Thompson. And if you need more, like, you know, playing a small team, you might go Javonte Green. And then, you know, Pat Williams is the guy that's just like, just a complete wild card. Like, you just have no idea what you'd get out of him right now, right?
Well,
like,
I think it's a wild card that he might be still designated as a starter.
He might not even play.
Though.
I leave him as like a, you just have no idea what's going to happen here. He may not even play again this season, or he might be really good and even end up in the starting lineup. Like, it's just like that, the barometer on possible outcomes there. It's just, you know, it's just so large. Like, it's just, I mean, it's just so wide, like the different range of things that can happen.
Doug, if I made you head coach of the team though, and he came back healthy in the middle of March, let's say on the 13th or 14th, he's ready to go. What would you do? Are you telling me you'd ask him to sit out the rest of the season?
Well, I'd give him minutes, but like,
as a starter.
I wouldn't start him.
No, so who's starting start him right away ahead of him?
Right now he's got to prove to me that he's better than Derrick Jones Jr. and Javonte Green and Tristan Thompson. He's behind all those guys until he shows me something otherwise.
I think he's a different type of player.
And like he might do that regardless. Yeah, they're all different players, right? You know, maybe you'd say Derrick Jones Jr. and Javonte Green are not so different. Those guys are maybe kind of similar as like guys who are the size of wings, but we throw them at power forward anyway. But yeah, he's a different player, but like he's got to prove he can play well. Like he just flat out sucked this year.
Five games.
Like for his five games. Right. Yeah. So he sucked and then sat out for 6 months. Like, okay. Like, prove to me you don't suck first, because, you know, going into the season, you know, we were whatever, but you know, now we're really good and we're about to hit the playoffs and we want to make a long run. Like, you know, this isn't time for us to see how good you are or give you minutes to develop yourself or figure out what's going on. Like, no, you have to prove it on the court. You got to prove you're good on the court. And so he's going to have to beat those guys out in practice, in my opinion. He'll get minutes in March and April, no matter what. Like, I'll get him on the floor. I'm not going to start him, but I'm going to try and get him 15 minutes. You know, just like with, say, Kobe White when he came back from his injury, you know, earlier in the year, and he was really bad for a while, and you played him 10 games and you stuck it out. Like, I would do the same with Pat. Like, I'd give him minutes the rest of the regular season. But when the playoff rotation comes around, he's going to have to have proven that he's better than the other guys in front of him. Like, I'm not losing playoff games so I can develop Pat Williams. Like, that just is not something that I think anyone is willing to do. So,
I would be.
You know, if he can't prove himself, he's
out. I would
out.
Be.
You lose playoff games to give Pat Williams
I think
minutes.
He's so important to the ceiling of the team. Like, if we're going to win a title, I don't think Javonte Green is considerably better than Patrick Williams.
I can't even believe
this.
Well,
this is why I don't agree with you, is that you're assuming you know how I felt about Patrick Williams.
No. I made this statement, and you would lose games in the playoffs to play Patrick Williams, and you
said
yes.
Well, I don't believe it.
You would take a Bulls playoff loss. No, that's different than saying you don't believe that would happen. It's okay if you say, like, I'd play Pat Williams because I don't think that would happen, but that's not what you said. You said you would take a playoff loss to get Patrick Williams minutes in the playoffs. So do you want to retract that statement?
I'll have to contemplate a little bit longer because, number one, it's impossible to know. But let's say in another dimension, I was able
to see.
It
doesn't matter. It's either,
I was able to see.
I gave you a statement. You can see it. We're going to lose a game because of Patrick Williams. Would
no,
you take the loss
I, no,
to give him
I would
minutes?
Not. I would
okay,
not.
That's okay. Fine. So now we agree that like it's going to be hard to tell if that's the case.
It's impossible to tell. Like,
there's many different things. But what it really comes down to then is if you don't think Patrick Williams is as good as the guys in front of him, you play the other guys.
I think there is a little bit of you can lose the battle and win the war. With him, does he optimize the starting Patrick Williams in the playoffs? Optimize our chances at winning?
No,
we don't. I think that's debatable. But let's say it's a little bit on your favor.
If he comes back how he was,
not that significant. It's not. You think it is?
No, it's not.
But it's not. It really isn't.
I didn't say I think it is. Don't put words in my mouth.
You're
I disagree
just
with you. I said, no, it's not.
It's got to be significant if they're going to lose a playoff game to play him. And
well, what I'm saying is Patrick Williams has not played in 6 months, and he was really bad when he last played. So he's going to have to prove that he's not really bad.
Which he'll do.
And that's, I mean, which maybe he didn't do it in five games or the preseason. So maybe. Like, I don't know what part of sitting out for 6 months you think made Patrick Williams a radically better basketball player.
If he was
player,
sitting out,
but with it's knee, like not a super likely thing
if
to happen.
He's sitting out with a knee injury. Yes, he's sitting out with a wrist injury to his left
hand.
I'm
sure his ball handling and aggressiveness got way better while he was hurt. As did his shot. Like, it was putting up all these shots, right? Yeah. Okay. Come on. Look, it's fine. Like, he may have just had a rough start, and he may be better. I'm just saying he's got to prove it. That's all. He's got to prove it. He's got to play better than those guys. If he's really better than them, if he can't beat out Javonte Green, like right now, then whether you think he's part of the future or not is irrelevant, because he's not. Like, I mean, like, he's got, but I mean, like saying I'm asking you to beat out Javonte Green and you're like scared about that. Like, well, then you're probably not that great.
Well, I don't know about that. He's still young. Doug, I don't know if you knew this, but
he's only 20. He's only 20 years old.
Last year he was only
19. You know, next year he'll only be 21. So it's only every
second tweet I read about him. I know.
It's fine. I'm not upset if he plays. I just, like I said, he's got to prove it. That's all. In the playoffs, he's got to prove it. This is like, this year and next year are going to be really critical years for the Bulls to have a chance to win.
Hey, what's up? It's Emily, and I'm pretty sure that compassionate, coordinated healthcare is something on the top of everyone's mind. That is why I love Live by Advantia Health. From primary care to mental health and gynecology to obstetrics, Live understands these are all connected and important to you. Live is a membership-based practice in the heart of DC that prioritizes your experience. Plus, Live accepts all major insurance. So take charge of your healthcare on your schedule and choose Live. Learn more and become a member by searching for Live by Advantia, L-I-V by Advantia.
You know, it's just, I just don't think you give up this year, or even, I shouldn't say give up, that's a bad phrase, because you're right, it assumes it's a huge gap between those guys, which I don't think is true. I don't think you do anything at all, no matter how small, to limit your chances to win this year. I think you go for it this year with everything you have, and that means playing the best guys in the playoffs, regardless of, even if it hurts Patrick Williams' development a teeny bit. Like, if he's not ready to beat out Javonte Green, then yeah, he might be next season when he has an off season to work on his game and do all this other stuff. He still might become very good, but you don't use the playoffs as a time to develop a guy who is struggling. That's just not the time to do that.
Agreed. Let's hope he doesn't struggle when he comes back. I don't expect him.
Yeah,
to
I hope
struggle.
He kicks ass.
I want to see him get some meaningful minutes in the playoffs.
I hope he just watched Tristan Thompson bully guys around. And like watch Devontae Green and Derrick Jones Jr. like play with high energy and picked up on the Bulls' offensive nuances and whatever other things. Like, I hope he comes back and is tremendous. And if he is, obviously he'll play. Like, that starting spot is his to take, right? Like, if he plays well, it's his to take. It's not like there's anyone in front of him that's so great. Like, you know, it's like Javonte Green, maybe we got him on a deal and he's better than a minimum salary guy, but he's worse than a mid-level guy. And Derrick Jones Jr. is probably a mid-level guy or worse on his next deal. So, like, it's not like this spot, even with the guys I have, are like that hard to beat out. Like, so, you know, he absolutely has a chance to be the guy and take it, you know, if he comes back and is really ready to go. It's just, you know, we've not seen that yet, and I want
to
see it.
The path to greatness is there. I don't want to say the path to greatness.
I don't think.
I'm
whatever.
Describing it in a poor fashion.
The path to very goodness is there.
The path to building confidence and really having some nice moments is there, because the teams that we're playing are throwing their four to double on DeMar DeRozan due to his greatness and Zach LaVine almost every possession, especially down the stretch. And it's hitting people in the face, and I don't understand why we can't admit it. You know, like, Javonte does a lot of great stuff. One of them is not spacing the floor, and one of them is not punishing doubles.
But everyone does admit that. I don't know, like, why you act like people don't see these. Like,
I get called out
the only
for
one
hating
that notices
Javonte
them.
Green for just
because you do hate Javonte Green.
Javonte Green.
So you
That's
do hate
ridiculous.
Him. You all you do is say negative
That's
not
things.
True.
Just
I
like always
talk
about
Kimerick,
how nice he is.
Just like you don't hate Ryan Arcidiacono. Just like you don't hate don't all hate these other guys that all you ever do is bring up to say negative
about
things about him.
Doug, this is true.
Like, let me put it this way. Javonte Green,
Javonte
Green is like a radically better player than Denzel Valentine. Like,
he's
as
not
an example,
a radically better player.
Whom you love, but he is. That's why you hate him. Or maybe we'll remove the word hate because it implies like an emotional
and I don't,
attachment.
I've zero.
You underrate Javonte Green relative to where you should. You underrate him considerably relative to where you should. He does have every single weakness you mentioned. You're completely right on that, but you don't weigh the total balance of his strengths appropriately.
I guess you could make an argument that I may be guilty of that occasionally, but I do feel like when the playoffs happen, dog, let me tell this story. I haven't told the story in this show yet, and I have told it. Actually, my dog's barking. So why don't you say something right now? I'll hold off because it's not going to sound well.
All right. Yeah. You hold off while the dog is barking because that's something that needs to be managed right away. I got it. One thing I saw, and you're gonna hate me for this, so you'll get revved up. Yeah. Io DeSumo, the last game, I don't know if you saw this one play, and I don't know why it stood out to me so much. And it's just going to go into something you love and hate at the same time. He's like wide open on a DeMar DeRozan kick out for a three. And then he just kicks the ball over to Javonte Green, who like bricks the hell out of a three. And it was like 10 seconds after he just nailed back-to-back threes.
Io?
And he's like wide open. Io? I'm like, Io. He just hit like the two back-to-back threes, and he gets another wide open three, and he's like, you know what I need to do is give this ball to Javonte Green. And I'm like, that's a super unselfish thing to do. But like the know your personnel thing, that goes for the guys on your team too. You just nailed two threes. You're a badass. Why the hell are you passing to Javonte Green on the three-point line?
He's trying to build his confidence.
I don't know if he thought someone else was there, like if he thought it was Zach or something out of the corner of his eye or what happened, but I was like, dude, just take that shot. Just take that shot. It was like those two threes Io hit, like, oh man, I don't know, and so I just kind of gave Io a little bit of a hard time, and now I'm going to make it up to you.
Good. Thanks.
I don't know if there's anyone I have more confidence in when like an open three is there than Io DeSumo.
Really?
Like Io DeSumo and like Zach LaVine are like the two guys that I'm like, that's going down. Yeah. Like Zach LaVine, if he's open for three, like it's almost automatic. But Io DeSumo is like right there. Like when Io gets an open three, I'm like, I have such incredible confidence that shot is going down. It's just like unbelievable. You know, like Lonzo Ball, like he has like hot stretches. Like, so if Lonzo Ball made two threes already, then the same thing applies. Like once Lonzo Ball's made two, I'm like, yep, the next one's going down.
He's either four or
five. But like
five,
if he's not shot
or
one
of eight. That's what Lonzo does.
Yeah. But like if he's not made one yet, you're like, I have no idea. Is this good Lonzo or bad Lonzo night? It's one or the other. Like it's either I'm gonna make 7 out of 7 or I'm gonna make like, yeah, 1 of 8. Like it's just there's like almost no in between. But like Io, like, man, when he's open, like that dude is just ridiculously money, ice in his veins. I love Io so much.
Yeah, and you know another great thing about him.
I always liked
him,
but like my love is almost dear level.
He takes care of the ball. He doesn't have dumb turnovers. He's aggressive. He plays with huge amount of confidence. It's everything we saw at U of I. He just brought it right to the pros, which is very rare, Doug. You know, it's very rare to see a guy play with that much confidence and just transfer it over.
There's another play I want to bring with Io in the last Hawks game, and he was driving, and it was like a fast break, sort of. It's like there's like two guys back, and I think it was Kevin Huerter who was in front of him, and he went in for like a layup, and I remember thinking like, man, if this was early in the season, there's no way Io makes that shot. Like I just feel like he's gotten so much better at finishing and like reading and understanding NBA defenses and the length and whatever is around him, or I don't know what it is, but like the dude early on in the year was just getting blocked at the rim, like just over and over and over again. And you'd like never see that anymore. Like just his improvement over the course of this season has also just been stunning. Like how much better he's gotten as the season has progressed. You know, like he started out like killing it on defense, but his like shot was off and his finishing was off. And like, you know, it's like, but man, is he gotten a lot better over the course of the season. I so wish we had him on a 3-year deal.
I know. I do.
So we didn't have this weird poison pill situation that's going to develop with him later. But I think no matter what, even if you have to pay Io like $30 million a year for 2 years and you get him cheap for 2 years and expensive for 2 years, I think you just do it. I think you do it. I think this guy looks like he might be a max player like in another 3 years.
No doubt, but the danger is here though, right? And they have no control over this. He's an unrestricted free agent at the end of next season.
No, that's not true. He's
restricted. Oh, he is restricted. So whatever anybody offers, we can match it, even if we go into the tax?
We can match, but it's weird. It's weird contract terms. So the way it works is because he's an early bird free agent, it's the Gilbert Arenas provision, where Golden State lost Gilbert Arenas because even though he was an early bird free agent and they had matching rights, they couldn't actually legally match his salary. So they put in this provision that says you can now legally match any salary. So if a team offers Io DeSumo a max deal, they can't offer him a max deal straight out. All they can do is offer him basically the equivalent of the mid-level exception for 2 years, and then the max salary for 2 years after that, and whatever that totals, which would probably be about $80 million, they can offer him that. And then they would pay him $20 million a year for 4 years. But for the Bulls, the contract is structured differently so they can match the deal. It gets structured as mid-level exception for 2 years and then max for 2 years. So for another team making an offer to Io, like a max offer, it would be 2020-2020, which would be probably a great deal for Io the way he's playing right now, or a good deal, right? For the Bulls, it will be structured as 10-10-30-30. And so you're getting this tremendous value for 2 years now, but then you have to pay him 30-30 in those last 2 years, which is then maybe, you know, for some guys becomes a little high. And that happened with the Bulls with Omer Asik when he went to Houston. It was the same type of thing where it was like the deal was going to cost the Bulls 4-4 and then 15 in the final year. And they're just like, well, we don't really want to, we can't afford to pay Asik that much money in that last year because of the poison pill. But for the Rockets, it went down as like 8-8-8. And it was like a much better contract structure. So that's the risk the Bulls will take with Io, is they're going to have to match this weird thing. But even if they have to do it, I think you just do it. You just suck it up and you do it. And you pay him $30 million for those 2 years.
Absolutely. I mean, when you add in everything else, that he's Chicago. He's from Chicago. Yeah,
it's a value. It's a value for 2 years.
There's so much more that goes into Io. It's really an incredible story.
I don't
story.
Think that from Chicago stuff
It does,
matters.
Though. Doug, I know you'll say story. I know it you'll say it does.
Not from
it
building does. A team. Not from building a team. I get it matters to the fans.
That's all I'm saying.
But it doesn't matter if you want to win it. Yeah, it matters to the fans. But it doesn't matter if you're trying to win a championship. I'm just saying, even trying to win a championship, you
here's what here's where it matters. If you let a player like that walk, you suffer just beyond normal consequences for such an action. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but you can't worry about it. All you can worry about is, like, you do the thing you do to make the team the best you can make.
Let me highlight the story. Yeah.
Like, all the other stuff is noise. Like, you have to make the team as good as it can be, because if you pick guys who are fan favorites, you know, like, say everyone loved Ryan Arcidiacono and then we signed him for $30 million a year, like, and the team blew because Ryan Arcidiacono is, like, a minimum salary or out of the league caliber player, it wouldn't matter that everyone loved him. And clearly no one feels that way about Ryan Arcidiacono, but just I'm making, like, a ridiculous point just to kind of, you know, the case. Like, you have to make decisions that make the team good. If you make a decision that makes the team bad, even if it's a player everyone likes, you know, it's like people turn on that player really fast, you know, once he's making a ton of money and not producing at the level they want him to.
Yeah, it'd be like paying Javonte Green $10 million. You've seen... It's a big difference if he's making minimum.
It'd be exactly like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would not like Javonte Green. Like, I mean, I think it's a great signing because we have him at the minimum next year, too. And so a guy who we can have at the minimum who can come in and chew up a lot of minutes and do certain things, he's limited, but he can do certain things at the minimum, like that's really valuable. It's hard to find minimum guys who are valuable. So I love that. But yeah, if Javonte Green was making $10 million a year, I wouldn't be excited about him. And same with like Derek Jones next year when you got to bring him back. And you know, if you have to pay him $10 million and you know, now you're in the tax for Derek Jones Jr., like I don't know that I would do that. You know, you hope that Pat Williams
develops.
That's a tough
call. I think Derek Jones Jr. is worth $10 million a year. That's what his market price is. His market price is actually probably more than that now, probably about 15, I'd say. I like him. I think he's a really good player.
I don't think so, and I don't think you keep him. I mean, really it comes down to, if you think about it, say Patrick Williams was on this roster and healthy right now. You know, it's like, is the upgrade from Javonte Green to Derek Jones Jr. worth going – you know, pretty decent into the tax and then limiting all your other moves for, because you can only play Green two of those guys. Like you know, you're not going to use Green then if Derek Jones Jr. and Patrick Williams is playing. So, you know, it's like the drop off between Derek Jones Jr. and Javonte Green is not worth paying $9 million for. That's how I would view that. If you didn't have Javonte Green on the roster for $1 million, then it would be a little bit different of a story, because now the drop off is between, you know, Derek Jones Jr. and a guy you can sign for the minimum. And you probably can't expect to get Javonte Green's performance for the minimum, even though he's a minimum guy for the Bulls. So that would be a little different for me. So I guess it's situational. Like, all of it is marginally what value you get for each dollar you spend.
The analogy I wanted to bring up, Doug, that I haven't talked about, I think I talked about it on Marquez's show, was when I was a youngster, as a sixth grader, I was one of the greatest players in the history of the Southwest Catholic Conference. Playing for St. Gerald against a team called St. Catherine. St. Catherine had two elite athletes, bigger than me, stronger than me, who every time I played them, they would just be waiting for me at half court and doubling on me and essentially often shutting me down to normal numbers. my father was a head coach, designed a certain offense to counter this that allowed for a player on our team. I'm just going to use a code name. His name was Tommy, let's say. It's not his real name. I'm just saying it just because I know some people listen to this who know this whole story. And it allowed for Tommy to get in position to score in one of these games 23 points. He just got layup after layup after layup because his man was doubling on me, essentially. So my father punished the double. Flash forward to 3 weeks later. Actually, after the game, one of our assistant coaches, who later went to prison because he was a complete moron, said, if everybody on this team could play like Tommy, then we'd all be a lot better off. I gave his real name there. But regardless, flash forward, which was, and I remember thinking, what a dumbass. This guy doesn't even know what's going on the court. Like, come on, dude. This is just a kind of a microcosm of what's happened. I'm a little bit different what's happening with the Bulls right now. DeMar DeRozan is so darn good, and he's attracting so much attention that he's allowing other players to shine who really aren't anywhere near him or in his realm. And a player like that is Javonte Green. I'm just saying that's why he's having so much success, because he's got straight line drives to the basket. He's getting a ton of rebounds. He's doing all those good things, and great for him. But when we get to the playoffs like we did then 3 weeks later against St. Catherine, and they decided to, you know, actually guard Tommy, he didn't score anything. And I think that's what we're going to see as we play these teams with better perimeter defenders that can go one-on-one against Zach LaVine and go one-on-one against DeMar DeRozan. They don't have to double. And when we play the Nets and they have Ben Simmons, and we play the 76ers and they have a number of good perimeter defenders, and we play the Milwaukee Bucks and they have Holiday, we're in trouble if we're not going to punish that action. What say you?
And the whole analogy is ridiculous.
How Look, dare you?
If Javonte Green was averaging 20 points a game because everyone was doubling DeMar DeRozan, sure. Javonte Green doesn't score now. No one thinks Javonte Green is good because he scores. Occasionally,
I get a lot of emails.
And yeah, he'll occasionally score in the playoffs too when people double team DeMar DeRozan, because they'll still do that at times. Like, I agree, like, his offensive limitations will be more visible in the playoffs. Everything will be more visible in the playoffs. But Javonte Green is not like the big thing that is going to be the problem. You know, like, I think probably a bigger concern is like the fall off of Zach LaVine recently, whether it's been injury or whatever, not being able to get things going lately. You know, like, he's got to step up and play really well. I mean, the Bulls have a lot of options, right? Like I just said, you could just throw out in your starting lineup DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine, Lonzo Ball, Nikola Vucevic, and Ayo Dosunmu or Alex Caruso. And throw like Lonzo at power forward or DeMar power forward or whatever, and Javonte Green's off the roster. Like, you have choices to just, you know, when everyone is back healthy, you know, you don't need him to even be in the rotation. And I don't think he's going to play as much. I think, and with everyone healthy, the way Ayo has like come and like taken like a huge amount of minutes, I think Javonte Green is going to be hurt, you know, hurting for minutes considerably when the playoff comes. And that's fine. Like, I think that's great. Like, I don't think you rely on him. I just don't know why you have this penchant for beating up on, like, who would be the 8th or 9th guy in the rotation or 10th guy in the rotation.
Hey, I have a great tweet here from Skip Bayless. I occasionally...
Is it about how much LeBron sucks?
Because I love all those. Well, I think there are a lot of them are ridiculous, but occasionally he comes up with some brilliant ones. Skip Bayless.
Okay.
I'm starting to think DeMar DeRozan has taken the MVP lead. I'm also wondering why the San Antonio coach failed to unlock this kind of performance in either of the previous two seasons. Let's just concentrate on the first one. Is it possible in the interim since our last pod when we kind of talked about this that now DeRozan has clearly emerged as, you know, before he was like 7th, right? I think in our last show we were talking about that in Vegas.
Yeah, he was like 7th, but that information that I had was like a week old, and he had that Wilt Chamberlain. I mean, like, he's had like the last 8 games are like... If he could compete like the last 8 games over a long stretch, he would have the greatest season in the history of the NBA, like basketball. So clearly the last eight games have helped him a lot. You know, I still don't think anything, you know, in this Atlanta game was like another game where basically it wasn't a game winner like the two, but it's basically another game. He hit 2 shots in like the last 45 seconds to you know, take the Bulls from being down to being up, and they won the game because of that. So it's, you know, effectively like a, you know, their third game-winning performance, and he's had other performances like that. So he should be up there, you know, like, and he is, like, he's up there. You know, I don't know what I've said before, and I'll say again, is at the end of the season, if the Bulls finish, as number one in the East, you can't vote anyone in the East above him. Like, you can't give it to Joel Embiid if his team record is not exactly better than the Bulls. Going into the season where you thought the Bulls were going to be radically worse than Philadelphia, and they're radically better.
And Milwaukee's had significant more health with their best players than the Bulls have. And so it's insane.
So no one in the East. So that's really what it comes down to. Can DeMar DeRozan, can the Bulls stay number one in the East? Like, I think for DeMar DeRozan to win, that has to happen. And then you start looking at, like, well, who are the guys with, like, better records than him? And if we look at it right now, say everyone just wins on percentage the same way out, then Phoenix, Golden State, and Memphis would be the teams that have better records. And you look at Phoenix and you're like, all right, is there a guy in Phoenix that you think is better than DeMar DeRozan? And it's like, there's so many guys there you'd be splitting the vote between that I think the answer is like, no, I don't think you give it to Chris Paul.
Of course
not. I don't think
now he's out 2 months. Booker. Of course, every year this happens.
Yeah.
And they'll continue to win.
And so maybe,
there you go.
Maybe if they continue to win and Chris Paul's out, that actually does make a case for Devin Booker. But regardless, I think DeMar is ahead of anyone in Phoenix. And then you look at Golden State now, it's like, okay, well, is he ahead of Steph Curry? Steph Curry started out like absolutely destroying everything, but his numbers have now faded since then. And I think now, you know, and he's won before and he's done whatever and he's super decorated. So I think DeMar can be ahead of him too. You get to Memphis, who has a better record. Now you're going to compare him to Ja Morant. And so, you know, Ja Morant, actually, I don't think he's got the momentum that DeMar has right now, and he's like so young that it'll be hard, but like, man, if I think about it, it's like the Grizzlies are another team similar to the Bulls. You didn't expect a whole lot, and they're basically, Ja Morant is carrying them with probably less around him than DeMar DeRozan is, and so while there might be a case there, I think he'll still be ahead of Morant because people view Morant as too young and blah blah blah, like he doesn't have the momentum yet. And so then it's just going to come down really to like Nikola Jokic, who just has like superior advanced statistics that are just like crazily off the charts. Do you want to take him or do you want to take DeMar? I think is what it would come down to. So if the Bulls finish number one in the East, I think it's DeMar or Jokic who wins, and DeMar will absolutely have a great case because to finish at number one in the East, the Bulls will also have had to have had a tremendous run against good teams to close out the season. So I think he's got a legit shot at it, but it's going to be really hard, and it's going to have to come down to the Bulls continuing to win and beating these really good teams. And if they do, I think he actually has a really good
chance. Not only should he have a good chance at it, I think it'll be a travesty if the Bulls finish this season with the injuries they've had as a number one team in the East and he's not the MVP. It's a complete freaking joke. Regardless, Embiid, I don't care how good of a season he has, he now has Harden. If he doesn't finish the season as number one, why is he going to get it over DeRozan? Why would Giannis get it above DeRozan? And why, you know, as great of a year, and I think he's arguably the second or third best player in the league, no doubt about it. You can't – Denver's sixth in an inferior conference. So he deserves the MVP if he is the best player on the team that somehow comes out of the East, the superior conference, with so many injuries. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Let me just put it this way. Nikola Jokic's numbers, 28.3 points a game, 8.6 assists per game, 15
insane.
Rebounds a game.
No doubt. Great player.
It's just insane. It really just comes down to there's two types of players that win. There's like the best guy on the best team, and then there's the guy with just like the crazy numbers that are like mind-boggling. And Jokic is that guy. There's no one who's the best guy on the best team, really. Unless it's like you think it's Devin Booker, and we probably just discussed we don't. But, you know, like DeMar DeRozan isn't the best guy on the best team either. Now, if the Bulls are the number one record in the league, it's a lock. DeMar has it, like at the end of the year. Even if they're like the number two record in the league, it's a lock that he has it. Like it's a lock. There's not even a question. If the Bulls are like number one. And so they're like two, three games behind Golden State, like if you were to compare across conference to be like the number two record in the league. Like if they were able to pass Golden State in record by the end of the league and they were second only to Phoenix, I think DeMar is a lock. You know, because then like the quality of the team becomes so high and he's in that like best guy and the best team kind of thing. But right now he has the fourth best record in the league, even if he's ahead of the East. And that's like far enough down that I don't think you get as much credit for that. And then statistically, there's just guys who are just in a different planet than him. And you know, that might change. That's not been true over the last eight games. In the last eight games, he's been a different planet than everyone. But over the course of the season, he's not done that. And, you know, we'll see too. Like I said, last show, I think there's a chance his stats and impact, I shouldn't say impact, there's a chance his stats drop with Zach back. You know, like a lot of these games, he was just doing unreal stuff with Zach on the bench. He did again, you know, last game with Zach playing, but there's a chance that if Zach starts taking up some of those shots again, that he's not going to have that same level of scoring that, you know, starts to be so eye-popping. But, I mean, you know, it's an honor to be in the top five, right, no matter what happens.
Yes.
And, you know, I think he's like top two or three. You know?
Well, yeah, agreed. And one thing I can't trust enough, though, is as great as Jokic is, again, 52 games against the inferior conference. They're playing 52 games in the Western Conference. A lot of bad teams there. Eastern Conference is far superior this year. 52 games against the East for DeRozan. He deserves the MVP if the Bulls end the season with the best record. So I think that argument is...
I think it's good. I don't think it's unquestionable, but I mean, of the two of us, you're the one who's far more likely to be absolute. I'm the one who's far more likely okay. to bet. So probably par for the course for both of us.
And that,
I think there's arguments for guys, but yeah, he's there. It's amazing.
We love him. DeMar. He's the best.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
He's our MVP. And on that,
he's everything we thought he would be.
On that note, I got to bring the big red bus in because I got to get the basketball practice. DT, I love you, my friend. Pulling it in, taking the big red bus, 7 miles high, 7 miles wide, 7 miles long. I screwed this up.
The big red cube.
I screwed it up. This Sunday, I know you can't make it. I wish you could find a way to get there somehow. But again, at 5 o'clock at the Windy City Bulls game, Bulls podcaster Palooza, Matt Peck, Big D have locked on, and they're moving on to another endeavor, which we'll find out next week. We got Ricky O'Donnell and Jay Pat. It's going to be a star-studded group. The On Tap guys. It's going to be awesome. So hope to see you guys there at halftime. You're going to hear us talk next to the trophies on all things Bulls. So it'll be a great time. And Denzel Valentine's playing also in the stadium with the Maine Celtics. So it's going to be an incredible night. And you get a jersey if you're a kid. So I can't say enough good stuff. Awesome. All right, my man. Until next time.
All right, Fred.
What's our...
We
there's no thing. We got to come up with one. Yeah, you got to cut this. All right, my man. Have a good one, DT. Right. Talk to you later, Brad. Bye-bye.
See you, Fred. Go Bulls.
Hey, there's something different about my mango pineapple smoothie.
Really? My caramel frappe tastes fine.
Nah, something's definitely different.
No difference, other than I got them for half off because I ordered on the app.
Well, that explains it.
Explains what?
How things seem to taste so much better when you're getting a sweet deal.
Okay.
Right now at Mickey D's, get 50% off any size McCafe beverage when you order through the McDonald's app.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Limited time only at participating McDonald's. Valid one time per day. Visit McDonald's app for details. Download and registration required.